Welcome to the Red Sneaker Writers Podcast. News, interviews, and writing tips for people who are serious about having a writing career and want some practical knowledge to help them achieve it. Your host is the nationally best-selling author of more than 50 books, William Bernhardt.
Hello, Red Sneaker Writers. This is episode 53, going out on September 7th. And we are recording live from WriterCon 2020. And yes, as you can hear, there are actual people in the room. We did a split conference this year for the first time ever, in addition to the people who are here actually in Oklahoma City at the Skirvin Hotel. We have even more people streaming the conference from home. First time we've done that, but thanks to our friends at Titan AVL, this has worked beautifully, and I think it has made the conference even better, but the main thing is we didn't have to cancel. We persevered. So all of you who are working hard and writing and pursuing your writing dreams can get the information you need to achieve those dreams and move your career forward. On this episode of the podcast, my special guest interview will be with Alexandra Ott, who is a very successful middle grade and young adult author for Simon & Schuster. We will also have writing tips offered to you from people attending WriterCon this weekend. But first, the news. To me, the most interesting news story that we're covering this time comes from a webinar that was recently held by Ingram. As many of you probably already know, Ingram is a major book wholesaler and distributor. Most brick-and-mortar bookstores in the country, if not all, order their books from Ingram. But in most more recent years, Ingram has also become an important source of print-on-demand books. They also distribute to libraries, but particularly during the COVID lockdown, the major publishers, even the big five, have been relying on them more and more for print-on-demand books because the big corporations are finding they don't know how many to order. They don't know what bookstores will be open and which will be closed and what they can sell. And since they don't know how many copies to print in an offset printer, they've instead been relying on Ingram to set up their books in a print-on-demand capacity so they can just print books as they need them. Anyway, on this webinar on marketing and publicity, representatives from Ingram said that while overall the demand for books has not dropped too badly, the purchasing journey has shifted from in-store placement to social media and retail websites. Some of that just makes sense. During the lockdown, a lot of bookstores and other places where people go to buy books have been closed. The question is whether this is going to be a lingering change in the business. And clearly, the people at Ingram, who may be in the best position to know, think that it is. This particularly has an impact on publishers' book marketing efforts. For instance, according to the representatives at Ingram's, this means that search engine optimization and metadata optimization are going to be more important to people selling books than shelf space. Once upon a time, publishers would pay thousands of dollars to get premium shelf space in the front of the store or on end caps for the books. Now it looks like the things they do online may be far more important. Online customer reviews are becoming more important and indeed replacing hand selling. When people are buying books online, of course, they look at the reviews and see how many stars a book has. And sponsored ad carousels, like for instance at Facebook, where you can program and circulate and purchase a carousel ad, that's replacing point of sale displays. This, of course, is a monumental change in the way books are sold and the way books are marketed. As we've mentioned on previous podcasts, during this lockdown period, it's not so much that after the first month when nobody was buying anything, but after the first month, it's not that they weren't buying books, it's that they were buying books differently. a lot of people who had resisted ebooks initially apparently found that when the libraries are closed and the bookstores are closed, maybe ebooks aren't so bad after all. And ebook sales have soared. So have downloads of digital audiobooks, which again, people can do without going anywhere. You can open up your phone or iPod and have those audiobooks almost instantaneously. That is having a big change in the way books are sold. The audiobook market has been keenly important for years now and continues to become even more important. Rumors have been circulating for many months now that Spotify, the major distributor of streaming music by subscription, has been wanting to get into the audiobook market. And now it looks like it's true because about a week and a half ago, the company advertised for, quote, a head of audiobooks, which definitely sounds like they're thinking about getting into the audiobook business. The ad says that they're looking for someone with experience in or knowledge of traditional publishing. Once people started reporting on this ad, they actually took it down, but I suspect they're still looking for someone, just more quietly. Earlier this year, those of you who use Spotify will notice that for the first time, they offered a free audiobook of one of the Harry Potter books read by Daniel Radcliffe. That would seem like a pretty easy thing to sell. And I'm guessing that was a test market effort and that it went very well. Spotify, as you may know, has more than 300 million monthly active users. So this could be a huge expansion of the audiobook market. The thinking is that even though they have huge subscribers for streaming music, they're not making that much per person or per song because most of the money goes back to the artists. So audiobooks might be a way for them to increase their market share or their profits. Also about Audibles, we found out just this week that Audible, and that's the audiobook outfit that's owned by Amazon and is the largest audiobook distributor right now, Audible announced that it is separating out its exclusive audio content, what they call Audible Originals, and creating for the first time an Audible subscription plan, which has two tiers. There's Audible Plus, which allows you to subscribe, pay a monthly fee, and then you get access to a lot of audiobooks, but not all of their audiobooks. It does not include everything in Audible's catalog. But wait, there's also Audible Premium Plus, which costs about twice as much, but increases the amount of things that you can subscribe to, and also gives you a bonus one credit, which basically means that you can obtain one audiobook outside the subscription plan each month without paying more. All of this continues to evidence what I've been saying for many moons now on this podcast. Audiobooks are here to stay. Audiobooks are bigger than they've ever been before, and the ease of downloading an audiobook digitally without having any kind of cassette tape or CD or any other physical medium is just going to make them explode even more so. Red Sneaker Writers, you can produce an audiobook of your book, assuming you still retain the rights. This is something you can do, and now more than ever, it's something you need to do. For our writing tips section, I thought, what could be better when we're sitting here in the middle of WriterCon, the conference that wouldn't take no for an answer, that would cancel no matter what? Ask some of the people here what they've learned from being at WriterCon. We're recording this on the third day on Sunday, so there surely must be something by now. So, first up to the bat, Amy Lee. Amy, tell us what you've learned here at WriterCon.
Hi there. It's been a great conference, and I actually learned about building a social media marketing machine in 21 days from Christopher Maselli. It's been an amazing way to know how to automate all of my posts through all of my social media platforms.
Right, and we just heard how important that is.
Yes, absolutely. So very excited to be here. Thank you.
Okay. Next up, Dan Short, how about you? What have you picked up at the conference?
Thank you. The Maselli conference presentation was excellent. He always is. And I think for me, it's I'm a new author, and I have a lot to learn. I only have one book out, and I come here because I listen to and learn from people who have been doing this for a long time. Your presentations are always substantive for me, always giving me a deep understanding of the nuts and bolts of various elements of writing. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And for our third person, I'm going to ask who you've heard me call before my favorite author, Laura Bernhardt, my wife, author of many books, including Shadow of the Taj and the Wattland Files series. She's been speaking here at the conference and may have even picked up a thing or two herself. Laura, what do you think?
Absolutely. I don't think it's possible to come to this conference and not learn something. There's always something you can add to your knowledge base. I think I'm most intrigued by the session I sat in on about Book Brush, which is a fabulous tool for
yes.
authors. It's designed specifically for authors. And I've always considered graphics and coming up with those marketing images something completely beyond my scope. And I've completely changed my mind. I've come around. I've been on that site. I watched her presentation. And I'm convinced. I'm going to give it a shot. I'm excited to try it. I truly believe maybe I can actually take this over and do it myself.
Now, you're being modest. You're pretty good with graphics. I'm completely not. And yet when I'm a Book Brush customer too, and I 20 minutes on Book Brush, and I had some great ads for my new book and some business cards. They make it easy, right?
It looks like it's easy. I'm just getting signed up. I'm just going to give it a go. I was a little hesitant. But Kathleen was kind enough to sit down with me and show me a few things, even one-on-one. She was delightful. I'm so glad she came this year, and I'm excited about it. And something else that I won't say that I learned it, but because I know I've heard it before, and it can be hard, though. Something else that I was reminded of is that we do want to stay on top of things. We do want to keep persevering and working, staying forward, but I think sometimes we have to put blinders on a little bit because it's so easy to fall into the trap of comparing ourselves to others and getting overwhelmed and letting the self-doubt creep in on us. I know I'm guilty of this. I'm guilty of this.
No.
How often do I walk out and say, that's it, I'm done. And then 30 minutes later, I'm back writing again. It is easy to get overwhelmed. Don't let that happen to you. Stay the course. Stay persistent. Persevere, keep after it. We will get those books out. We all move at our own level, but we will get those books out if we just stick with it.
Thanks, Laura. That's a terrific tip and one that I think everybody needs to hear at one point or another. My interview for this podcast is with a stunningly successful middle grade and young adult author, Alexandra Ott. She's been writing books for Simon & Schuster for some years now. She's got 3 books in print. And as if that weren't enough, she is also an excellent editor. She worked for some time for Entangled, and now she's doing it on a freelance basis. Alexandra, I hope you won't be offended if I point out that you are younger than I am, and yet here you are with a major Big Five publisher and 3 books and more on the way. How'd you get started?
I started writing at a really young age. I finished my first novel-length manuscript when I was about 16.
Wow.
Of course, it wasn't any good. I had to write several more novels after that to eventually write Rules for Thieves, which was my first debut. But I think it was really just persevering, continuing to write even after that first novel that wasn't as strong or as well-polished as I wanted it to be. And from there, once I had a manuscript that I knew was something that seemed ready, then I started querying agents and found my literary agent and pursued publication from there.
But where did you get the knowledge? I knew that I wanted to write when I was 16, but I had no idea how to go. And I wasn't writing anything publishable either, but I didn't know how to. Where did you get find out about agents and publishers? Did you have some source of information?
Yeah, it was really a long learning process. I pretty much just started online, looking up blogs, articles, things that people were publishing about writing, getting on social media and connecting with other writers. I found some critique partners online and started working with them, and they gave me a lot of advice about writing craft and really helped me to strengthen my first book. So it was really just going out and pursuing the information about craft that I needed, the information about publishing that I needed, finding a lot of resources.
Was there a particular source that was really useful to you?
There's a blog called Fiction University. It's written by author Janice Hardy. I really found a lot of useful information there. Publishing Crawl is a young adult focused blog that's really helpful if you're interested in publishing for young adults. Yeah, those were the big ones that I think I started with.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but your books, is it proper to classify them as fantasy?
Yes.
Why did you go that direction?
Fantasy has always been my favorite genre. When I was a young reader, first reading books independently, fantasy was always the genre that I was most drawn to. So I knew immediately that I wanted to write the same kinds of books that I found most engaging as a kid. And most of those books were fantasy.
Mm-hmm. So you decided to follow the same line. Do you have a favorite author, fantasy author?
It's hard to pick one favorite. My biggest inspirations were Cornelia Funke, J.K. Rowling, Rick Riordan. I loved, who else? The Artemis Fowl series. That was a big inspiration for me. All of those sort of classic middle grade fantasy titles.
J.K. Rowling. I think I've heard of her. There's Wizards or something, isn't it? I won't ask how old you are. When that book came out, I can already guess, and it's just going to be depressing. So your first book was Rule for Thieves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one was?
The Shadow Thieves.
The Shadow Thief Thieves.
Thieves.
And are they related to one another?
Yes. The Shadow Thieves is a direct sequel.
Okay. And then the third one is?
The third one is called Seekers of the Wild Realm, and it's the first in a new series.
So that's a departure. Are we going to get a third book in the first series?
We are going to get a second book in the Seekers of the Wild Realm series.
Okay. So you're going to focus on that one now.
Yes.
Tell me what that's about.
So it's about a 12-year-old girl who wants to be something that's called a seeker, which in her village is someone who gets to find and care for magical creatures and also bring magical artifacts back to the village. But the problem is she's the first girl in her village to ever try to become a seeker. The seekers have always been boys. So she wants to win this magical competition to become a seeker. But when she's not allowed to train with the boys, she instead teams up with one of her biggest rivals and cares for a baby dragon in secret in order to get the knowledge that she needs to compete to become a seeker.
Sounds like a timely story. I like that a lot. As I said in the introduction, you also do a lot of editing. You used to work with Enchanted, and now you're doing it on your own. And if people want to find out more about that, visit your website?
That's right, alexandraott.com.
So what editing do you do, or what do you find that's most useful to the people that you work with?
I always recommend that writers start with a developmental edit so that we can focus on the big picture structure of the story, all of the biggest elements, the plot progression, the characterization, the world building. We really start from there. But then I also offer copy editing to look at the line-by-line edits and grammar and sentence structure and syntax and all of those elements.
When's the right time for a developmental edit, though? Should someone be contacting you before they start the book? Or when they're halfway through the first draft, or what do you think works best?
My recommendation is actually to do a revision on your own first, after you've written the first draft, and then to pursue editing once you know that you have made the changes that you can make and made the book the best that you feel you can on your own, and are then ready to get some additional feedback and some additional suggestions for how to improve the craft.
So that's probably after several drafts of the manuscript, I would think, right?
Yeah, I recommend at least one revision. More is better. I think the more polished that you can get the manuscript on your own, then the more beneficial you will find editing, because then you're getting feedback on things that you wouldn't have known to correct yourself.
But not when they're so far down the line, have worked on it so long, they resist change or outside input.
To be too far in the process that you're not willing to make any big picture changes, a developmental edit is definitely a structural revision. So you should be prepared to make those really large changes to any of the elements of the book. But I think it's helpful to pursue that developmental edit when you know that you have made the structural changes that you can on your own and you're ready to get that additional level of feedback.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've written several books. You've edited probably many more. What are the most common problems or mistakes? You can have more than one. But what are the most common things that cropping up in manuscripts you work on?
Yeah, there are a lot of big ones. I would say one of the most common is not focusing on character goals. Mm. Having a main character who doesn't have a specific goal in mind or something that they need, not knowing what they want. And so then the story often doesn't progress very clearly. It doesn't have any forward momentum because the character isn't clearly pursuing something. Mm-hmm. Similarly, I see a lot of issues with character agency, with characters who are just reacting to the things that happen around them, or they're just reacting to things that other characters do, and they're not making active decisions to pursue their own goals and to make things happen in the story.
That makes sense. So what's your day look like? You get up in the morning and start working on your book or editing, or do you do the editing between books, or how do you make it all fit together?
It varies a little depending on deadlines.
Right.
Right now I have a deadline for a revision of my next book. Most of my days are focused on trying to revise and meet that deadline.
Sure.
But on an average day, I typically start with editing in the morning. A lot of the just emails, setting up projects, sort of administrative work happens in the morning. A lot of editing in the afternoon and then writing at night.
Okay. What about just general writing advice? I usually launch these interviews by asking if you could give an aspiring writer one piece of advice, what would it be? But I didn't think of that this time, so I'm just going to wedge it into the middle. If you could give an author one piece of advice, what would that be?
Oh, I think the most useful thing that a writer ever said to me mm-hmm. was to cultivate perseverance and patience. I am not very good at being patient. As a young writer, I had this novel and I really wanted to pursue everything right now, really wanted to be published as soon as possible. And it was really a process of learning how to continue persevering in my craft, even knowing that a lot of my goals were a long ways away.
Sure.
And that I had to be, you know, both patient in trying to achieve those goals, but also really persevering and going after what I wanted.
Well, that is the hardest thing about writing, much less a writing career. I'm used to, here's this thing I've got to do. I'm going to sit down and do it, and I'm not going to get up until it's done. Mm. But you can't write a book that way. It's going to take many moons, no matter how consistent you are. So you've got to be patient. And then building a career, that's even harder. That takes even longer. And yet here you seem to have done it. Where do you see yourself on down the road, 5 years or even 10 years down the road? Where would you like to be?
It's hard to predict anything, but what I'm working on right now, I want to continue doing middle grade fantasy novels and building my readership there, but I am also looking into developing a few more young adult ideas.
Sure.
I have some fantasy novels that I like to work on there as well. So yeah, just continuing to put more books out, continuing to edit.
Let's talk more about those books, because I think you're at least somewhat unique in that you've written both middle grade and young adult. Can you explain, you know, in the nutshell form, what's the difference? What are the different concerns for writing each of these for different age groups?
Yeah, there are several, but to sum it up quickly.
Oh, you don't have to be that quick. But
yeah, so middle grade is typically aimed at younger readers. Upper middle grade, like my books, tend to be readers ages 8 to 12, mm-hmm. Whereas young adult books are teenagers. So a lot of the big differences are just in making the books engaging for those audiences. So a middle grade novel is going to have typically an 11 or 12 year old protagonist. They're going to be really focused on the issues that are relevant for kids at that age. It's going to have a voice that sounds more like an 11 or 12 year old. They also tend to have a lot more focus on humor. They tend to have really fast pacing. Typically, you see a lot of sort of adventure stories as well as modern contemporary stories. Young adult is obviously more geared toward teenagers, so it's going to be a little bit more specific in genre. It's going to have protagonists who are typically 16, 17, 18. You'll see a little bit more maturity of content, typically some darker tones, less emphasis on humor, but still a lot of humor in them as mm-hmm. well. They maintain a fast pacing too. It's really about making sure that it's engaging for the specific age of
sure.
the reader.
Every book wants to be engaging, or
right.
every writer wants to be, but what's engaging to a sixth grader may be different from what's engaging to an 11th grader, right?
Exactly.
Probably less underpants jokes and more about dating or something like that. And now, of course, you hear people talking about new adult, supposedly for even older than the young adult, college and on. Is that a real thing or is that just something people talk about?
New adult was a thing. I don't think it's as much of a thing right now.
Was it ever? What would be a good example of a new adult book?
Yeah, so for a while there were a lot of titles actually that were considered new adult. They were primarily romance and focused on romance, and they were more college age protagonists or protagonists in their early 20s. There were several imprints that did publish new adult titles. When I worked at Entangled, we had a few new adult imprints. However, that category has mostly blended into either young adult or adult now. Mm. The more sort of the titles that are considered a little bit too mature for young adult are now just being marketed primarily as adult titles.
Right.
It wasn't a marketing category that was ultimately as successful as I think some publishers were hoping that it would be.
You're right. Trying to hold on to the Harry Potter crowd even as they aged out, but if they just read adult books, I think that works just as well, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Alexandra, this has been a total delight. Thank you for coming to WriterCon and thank you for being on this podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, that wraps it up for this podcast. And if you're sitting at home thinking, man, I wish I'd gone to WriterCon this year, and, you know, who wouldn't be? Because we're having so much fun here. I promise you, there will be a WriterCon 2021, and as soon as I have the details on that, I will let you know. But it will be Labor Day weekend in Oklahoma City next year. Until then, keep writing. And remember, you cannot fail if you refuse to quit. Everyone.